Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, along with Chad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend edition, also your host on our website and podcast throughout the week, really keeping everybody as up to speed as we can on some of the drivers, especially short-term drivers in the market, and chatting with still a number of companies, getting updates from them, recapping a lot of the work that's happened this year, and looking into next year. On the first two segments of this weekend show, we are going to be, again, looking ahead into 2023 in terms of a market outlook, as well as some of the economic data that continues to be a major player in Fed policy, and also how investors are positioning. We are chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. Axel, before we get into your outlook for the markets next year, I want you to recap what we've seen so far in markets this year. We all know that markets have been dropping pretty much all year. They entered bear market territory in a very orderly fashion in that more stair-step pattern downward. The last month and a half has been a bit better for markets, but we're still well off those highs of late last year. Axel, give us a little rundown of what you've noticed, the keys this year in terms of market moves, please.
Well, the key is that it's been miserable for everybody in some ways. And as the key thing is that both bonds and stocks have performed rather poorly. And while gold has been all right, it's not gone through the roof. And so for many years, if you take a step back and go after the financial crisis, equities went up and up and up and up and says, well, why the hell should I diversify if equities go up? I'll just stick with equities. Well, now everything is going down. And so it will take a while for investors to appreciate that there is actually value in diversification. And diversification does not mean you get a 20% return in some cryptocurrency. Diversification is a broader concept. And you got to think about why something might be worth a diversifier. So for the time being, quote unquote, everybody got burned. And particularly some of the quote unquote best strategies. One of the strategies that Ray Dalio and others had promoted is these risk parity strategies where you allocate equal buckets of risk to equities and bonds. And we already said like a year and a half ago that when inflation is high, those things break down. And so the key theme this year had, of course, been high inflation. The question is, how is this going to unfold going forward with the wonderful fellows we have at the Fed and elsewhere? And so we are in this tumultuous environment. This time is different in the sense that both equities and bonds have come down. What hasn't changed is human nature.
Well, Axel, I think that's a great point because human nature is still playing from the buy the dip playbook from the last dozen years, and most people have not switched over to a bear market playbook. And to your point, bonds and equities have had a rough year, but it's really strange. For decades, we haven't seen bonds underperform to this degree compared to the general equities in some time. And you brought up Ray Dalio and having that balanced bucket approach, but we've seen the bond bubble from the last 41 years pop. And as the Fed started tapering and stopped being the buyer of last resort, we kept asking people, who's going to buy all these bonds? And apparently nobody, because we've seen bonds go down and we've seen rates skyrocket up. Do you see that changing next year? Is there going to be a shift to the bond markets?
Well, if we sell it as a buyer somewhere, it's the question of price usually. But the reason why I think we still have the dip buyers in some ways, even on lower lows and whatnot, is because the Fed is in a pickle, right? They need to quote-unquote, tighten monetary policy. Their job is to break things. That is what hiking rates is all about. That said, since you use this eloquent term bubble, right, they have pushed things to such extremes that if they use their sledgehammer the way they should use it, we'll have the wheels fall off. And they don't want that. So the Fed wants to have this narrow channel where we gradually slow down the economy, gradually get down inflation, without the wheels falling off and without everything becoming too euphoric. And that's why we have this back and forth. Now, in practice, the bad news is inflation, once it is high, is no longer linear. Right? I mean, the year-over-year comparisons are bound to look better in the coming months, and so it will look like inflation is coming down. But that is absolutely no assurance that inflation will stay down. And so we have a Fed that doesn't have a proper framework. They're flying by the seat of their pants and worrying about the problem of today, but they don't have a forward-looking outlook, and it's a very, very tough environment for the Fed to govern things. And of course, for us as investors, we have to deal with the cards we're dealt with, right? We can complain all we want. Oh, I don't like what the Fed is doing. Well, hey, they got the bazooka and we don't.
That's right. Don't fight the Fed on the way up. Don't fight the Fed on the way down. Very different policy. And I think it surprised a lot of people with how many rate hikes the Fed has gotten in this year. And it looks like they're still going to be hiking at least early on next year. Another quick recap of this year for the markets has been this rotation of money. It makes sense when money is more expensive, when investors can actually get a yield saving money or in safer instruments. Well, they don't need to dive into growth so much. They've been looking more at value. Do you think this rotation of money that we've seen all year is here to stay?
In some ways, yes. I mean, there are different scenarios. The most likely scenario is that we're going to have a significant recession. I use the word significant carefully. I'm not talking about depression. I'm not talking about a soft landing, but a healthy, quote, recession. What that means is the Fed is going to hike rates. They're going to do 0.5% in December, then probably two more 0.25% rate hikes. And then in May, they will pause. And Fed policy acts with a lag. Now, even when we do get that recession, risk assets, meaning equities, they tend to bottom about half to two-thirds through a recession. Now, that can vary, but that's a reminder that based on the statistics, at least, that the Fed looks at, and based on historic comparison, what the bureaucrats deem to be a recession, we're not there yet. Unemployment is still too low, amongst others. And so that means we're not in the low in the markets. And in that sort of environment, value stocks do tend to outperform. Now, the reason why I differentiate between soft landing, hard landing, and whatnot is I actually think we've reached peak hawkishness, not peak rates, but peak hawkishness, that when Powell said, oh, we're not going to do 75 basis points rate hikes anymore, we'll now do 50 basis points, that was dovish, except he did the impossible. He convinced the market somehow, at least for the day, that that was somehow being tough. And the reason why that's relevant for you and your audience is that gold tends to be early in reacting to that. And especially also gold miners tend to, when the peak hawkishness is reached, we are likely, we have seen a bottom in that space. Whereas in the rest of the equity space, if we do get a significant recession, those can easily continue to go down further. Now, if we only have a soft landing, then equities might take off more quickly. But I just don't see that being realistic, that we have a soft landing in all this, with the Fed all but promising to be late. And so when I look at my crystal ball for 2023, and mind you, crystal balls are never right, but at least that's my view for the moment, is that the Fed will try to kind of play this dance and try to slow the economy. Now, mind you, Mr. Bullard, one of the more influential folks at the Fed, just recently said, hey, the market is not taking us seriously enough. We might go up to 7% rather than 5% what's currently priced into the market. And even after he said it, even though Mr. Bullard is influential, the market didn't take him seriously either. And I think the reason is that if the Fed really were to go up to 7%, the quote-unquote wheel falling off the cart scenario would kick in. And if we were to go up there, it would be very brief, and then they would have to do some emergency measures. So the scenario that the market is pricing in is a quote-unquote normal recession. This may be the most forecast recession ever. That's the one thing that bothers me about all this. But I would think there are many curveballs that can come our way, and then one of them is inflation is not going to exactly play by the book, and the forecasters might, for change, be wrong on inflation.
Well, Axel, I guess one of the questions I'd like to ask you, Axel, is as a topic you brought up in that answer, and that is that you think the gold and the gold miners may anticipate the peak hawkishness before the general markets do. And we saw that in the 2008-2009 great financial crisis, that the gold and the gold equities actually did bottom first and did start heading up even when the general markets were under pressure. We also saw that in 2018. So as we look into next year, if we get to that Fed pause moment, do you think that's going to be a boon for the precious metals as an early mover, maybe even while the general equities may still be facing some more weakness?
Yes, well, when I look at the world, I look at risks and opportunities, and I, generally speaking, what you would line out here, I think, is quite likely. Keep in mind, one of the reasons why miners, especially the juniors, are so very volatile is not only that they have this perceived leverage to the price of gold, which doesn't always pan out when costs go high, but notably, they need to access the capital markets frequently because they always only get funding for the next stage in their growth. And that's why in this initial environment, they were beaten pretty badly. On the flip side of it, there is a lot of breathing room then on the upside when suddenly there is light on the horizon. And so they catch up first. The better of these companies will get access to financing, and some disproportionate gains can be had. Now, clearly, it's a very volatile space. So I don't encourage anybody to put all their money into this. This is a volatile space. You've got to be able to stomach the sort of risks that come with that. But as you point out, historically, those miners have often reacted early and had taken the lead. And then obviously also, not obviously, but significantly outperformed. Obviously, in the sense that the volatility is higher and had significant outperformance over the equity markets in that period.
Axel, what's your takeaway from the general underperformance of the miners in what was a higher metals price? And we had inflation that is still high. It was running high, especially early on this year. And the metals started to drift lower. They were always viewed as inflation hedge, but this year had some of those long-term investors questioning that.
Well, the first one is, I do believe the price of gold reflects inflation outlook. Now, many of us are glued into the spot CPI index. And while I agree that you can't really beat inflation with interest rates less than the CPI, every asset is forward-looking. And so I find it much more helpful to look at longer-term inflation measures. Now, many in the audience will say, well, what the hell? How good are they? Nobody knows what inflation will be in 5 or 10 years from now. But that's not my point. My point is that the market is reflecting inflation expectations that far out. And if it is worthwhile on a real basis to hold cash, cash will do well. If it's worthwhile to hold, not to hold it, gold will do well. So as the Fed has had this increase in hawkish tone, those longer term inflation compensations have come down. The real yields have moved higher. And what that is really, it is not a reflection where inflation will be. It is the market's confidence that the Fed will get this in order. And we are off the peak in that of where the real yield will be. And part of it is because it's simply not sustainable to have real yields on a longer term basis very high. And so in many ways, right, you say, oh, gold hasn't done well. It has actually done very well, I think, in the context of how much hiking and hawkish tone has come out. And it's, I believe, because the market is calling the Fed's bluff that they simply cannot be as hawkish as they want to be. Now, translating that to the miners, got to differentiate between the majors and the miners. The big companies, they are not the same companies that they were in 2008. They were very aggressive back then, which gave them the edge that many gold investors wanted because they had the leverage to the price of gold. Whereas now, the big ones, they generate a boatload of cash, which means they're providing less leverage to the price of gold. Their balance sheet looks good, but they're depleting the gold that they own. And so they will have to go out and acquire new assets, but it hasn't happened. And to the extent we've had mergers or acquisitions, the market hasn't been kind to those. And so there's been a reluctance to have corporate activity there to have these bigger companies replenish the resources. And so what I believe we'll see at some point, at the latest in a few years, they have to get to that. And then on the mid-tier levels, I think we'll see some mergers. We'll see some mid-tier companies try to emerge, come up. And then, of course, on the small side, they'll just keep digging when financing conditions aren't good. They can throttle down their expenses much more easily because they don't have a production yet. And so the dynamics are different depending on where you are in the food chain in the mining sector. Overall, on the cost side, things are improving. Energy prices have come down. Some of the inflationary boosts that have hurt the mining sectors are also abating. And so a lot of the headwinds are turning into may not be tailwinds yet, but they are abating. And I think that will be reflected in the share prices as well.
Well, Axel, I think you raise a good point there that the markets, the institutions, and even the algorithms that do the high frequency trading, they really trade off the 5-year break evens and the tips market for inflation much more so than what we all look at, which is the CPI inflation numbers. And we take away the 10-year and we see much more negative real rates than what the market expectations are pricing in and trading off of. But as we move into next year, you know, I know that you run a stagflation fund. And we've been in a somewhat stagflationary environment. We've had high energy prices. We've had high inflation. We've had a relatively flat to slow economic growth, a stagnant growth. We've seen the unemployment numbers be stronger than many expected, but there are signs of cracks under the surface with unemployment numbers rising, with big tech laying off big numbers of workers or at least freezing hiring. As we move into next year, are you expecting the stagflationary environment to turn into a full-on recession, or do you think we could actually go too far and hit a deflationary point?
I do think we'll be in a stagflationary environment globally, quite likely in the US, I do think as well. We launched a stagflation ETF in May. The performance so far hasn't been great. And the big reason is we have a very significant, this is not intended to be a substitute to speculative miners, but it's really intended as a diversifier for a bond holding. And so the volatility is intentionally lower by design. And as such, we have a very large weighting in tips in inflation protected securities. And inflation protected securities have done poorly year to date, in part because inflation expectations, you use fancy terms like break evens, have come down, right? And so now the market is pricing in very high real yields and inflation expectations over those longer periods have come down. So if you are in the camp, and we are, that the Fed has a bit of visual thinking here, inflation may actually be higher, that part, a big component of portfolio, will do well. And historically, tips do well in a stagflationary environment. And other components in there is gold should do well. Oil, I just mentioned, they are lower. But if China does open up and reduce its COVID zero strategy, price of gold, of oil may end up going higher. And as more countries will shift towards a reflation environment, I do think that we will get this confusion in the market. But with some markets going up and down, what should benefit, in my view, are the commodities and the sort of environment we're in. And so, and that then mimics quite closely to what we had in the 70s, a stagflationary environment.
Axel, what has the interest been in that stagflation fund that you are running? Have you noticed a lot more people putting money in, taking an interest in that, or are they still trying to ignore this environment?
What we have seen is we've had tremendous interest, but little buying. And part of it might just be the rational reaction to the tips not having performed so well. But when we look at our metrics, and we are for-profit business, and so we run Google ads and whatnot, the engagement is phenomenal in the topic. They're looking for answers. Right. But as we've discussed in the outset, quote unquote, nothing has really worked. Right. And so people are shell shocked and they don't do anything. And so the question is, what is it that they have now? Are they in cash? Are they still stuck in equities? Are they investing in gold? Or are they looking for speculation ETFs? So I do think the time has come that those sort of diversifiers, as we're trying to write for the speculation ETFs, will be embraced more with people not just window shopping, but actually clicking the buttons and investing in those sort of funds.
Well, we talked a lot about tips and inflation-adjusted equities and looking at the inflation markets. Do you think the expectations, if inflation stays higher than people are expecting, and let's just say it gets down to 6%, 5% and hovers there, that's still going to be a headwind for business. That's still going to hurt retail profits. That's still going to hurt the consumer. It's going to be a higher cost of living for everybody. Do you think that those inflation expectations may get more embedded, which is what Jerome Powell fears the most? Do you think that looking forward into next year, people may have an aha moment and realize inflation is actually going to be stickier than they thought?
I think the scariest scenario is volatility. I actually think we will get lower inflation at what you're saying in the short term, but then it's going to jump around, and that confusion is going to irritate people. Will get people to not invest. At the same time, it will get politicians, whenever you have an upwave, to lash out and saying, "Oh, we need to have a windfall tax," which again is a disincentive to invest, and ultimately stagflationary. It's the wrong policy reaction that gets a stagflationary period to last a decade. If you just let the chips fall where they are, we through this in a reasonably short time, but it's because of the policymakers just throwing curveballs along the way that we don't know exactly how this is going to play out, except that it may well be volatile. And that's part of the reason why investors may want to be diversified and look at alternative strategies rather than just holding an equity portfolio.
It really sounds like we're going to have generally higher rates throughout next year, whether they're stable, whether they're raising slightly, what have you. It is a different environment with higher rates. Let's say rates go to around 5.5% in the US and hold there. Is that such a bad environment here, Axel, that it seems like everyone is saying we can't withstand these rates? They need to start cutting again. People can't survive at just a 5% Fed funds rate.
Well, we can survive 5% if we have sound fiscal policy. We can have 5% if we cut red tape and allow business to invest. We can have 5% if we have good governance in government institutions so businesses can plan. We can have 5%, yes, but we cannot have it if we're just using the sledgehammer, go to 5% and nothing else changes. Right? Larry Summers said that in order to get out of high inflation, you need a new framework. Well, we don't have a framework at the Fed. That is the problem, right? It's not the number that's the issue here, the level. It's that on its own, it doesn't do much. The only thing it does on its own, we know that it acts with a lag and that it's going to cause pain. Then we have pain and then what, right? And we're still stuck with inflation. That is the problem, right? We need more. We need more than just high rates. We need a rethinking at the Fed. We need to get rid of this idiotic backward-looking averaging, which is still not. We need to get a proper confession that they screwed up. Whereas all they said, "Oh, our models didn't work so well," right? And it's a little bit more than that. And as long as we don't get away from that, yeah, we'll be sitting here in a few months lamenting about the same thing, and not much is going to change otherwise.
Axel, what happens to the housing market if rates stay high? Because there's one, maybe investors that have their money in a CD or a money market may be excited about 5%, but new home buyers sure aren't. And the home rates, the mortgage rates, are up closer to 6.5-7% right now. If rates go even higher with another hike in December and another hike at the beginning of next year, what happens to the housing market in this environment and the collateral damage that would cause?
Well, it's going to take a while, but it's going to cause damage. And part of the problem is the way that the Fed measures inflation. It has such a lag that at this stage in the CPI, you still have increasing inflation based on how they measure the rental equivalent. So that's going to drag on for a while. And then, as you point out, there is going to be pressure and more pressure on housing prices. And there's going to be a lag on how that works. And then the inflation numbers are going to be low. And it's okay, now we can cut. Whereas in the meantime, the world does something different, right? And so again, the lack of a proper framework is causing more trouble. And yes, the high home prices we've had, there will be big adjustments. I'm waiting for, in our neighborhood, I live here in Silicon Valley, and one of the neighbor's homes was bought by somebody who made her money with cryptocurrency. And last summer, she told me she lost 75% of her net assets. And I asked her, "Why the hell did you take out the mortgage on your house?" "Oh, rates were so low." And I'm waiting for her to sell her house to get a little bit more comfortable that we might be reaching a bottom in the market.
All right, Axel, we're out of time, but I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts with all of us. Look, next year, boy, oh boy, there are a lot of question marks in terms of how everything's going to play out. No one has a crystal ball, as you said, but it is a different environment. I think we've all noticed that now. And the big question mark is how the central banks handle it and how investors weather the storm for next year. Axel, thank you very much for your time. I'll post a link to the Merck Investments website so everyone can find out more about the Stagflation Fund, as well as sign up for the emails that you send out to the subscribers, just keeping them up to date on your outlook for these markets. Axel, thank you as always for your time. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Have a good one.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.